Hey guys, welcome back to Crime, Lime, and Vodka. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Amber.
And today we're going to be doing the conspiracy of Kurt Cobain's death. I love him so much. Whenever I was watching the documentary for Montage of Heck and Soaked in Bleach, I was just like, that's my man.
I haven't even watched it yet.
Which one? Either?
Either.
Well, you see.
So now I'm about to learn all the stuff.
I watched him a long time ago, back in the day, when my, almost said addiction. My obsession was at an all-time high. And then I rewatched Montage of Heck yesterday. I think it was like last night. And Toby's like, that shit's so loud. Because like they are just playing his music so loud. Like even for the movie, it was loud. So I was like, okay, I gotta keep turning this thing down. But Soaked in Bleach is about the conspiracy of what they think happened to him. So we're gonna get into that. So, Kurt Cobain was born on February 20th, 1967 in Aberdeen, Washington to Wendy Fardenberg. That was like her maiden name, but her name now is O'Connor. And Donald Cobain. His name was Kurt Donald Cobain. I thought he was cute. When he would sign his name, he would do K-U-R-D-T. I think that was so cute. His parents divorced when he was 9 years old. So that pretty much changed him completely. He was like super happy and an excited kid. And once they divorced, he kind of just went down that spiral that a lot of divorced kids go through. I mean, I didn't have that, but like a lot of my friends, they were always like, I don't know. Their personalities changed a lot, I guess, with everything they were going through. His family had a musical background. His mom's father, which is his grandpa, played in a band called The Beachcomers. His aunt, Marie, or I guess you would say Mary Farley, played a guitar in an unnamed band. And his great uncle, Delbert, was an Irish tenor.
Okay.
So he's kind of destined to have, like, music in his blood. So he grew up around music. So they thought it was really cool. So for his 14th birthday, his uncle gave him the option, so I could buy you a bike or I could buy you a guitar. And he chose the guitar. He was right-handed, but he would play his guitar left-handed. So like he took it apart and restrung it to where he could play it left-handed wise, which who thinks of doing that shit? Yeah, that's like when you play baseball, they have like a left-handed baseball glove and shit. I didn't know that until I started looking this shit up. So he was seen as a very happy kid until the divorce. So when his mom remarried, he started having like outbursts at school, and he would get super bully, like he would bully the other kids at school, and he started to break into shit or like break things or start failing school, skip school, like he stopped going to school completely and dropped out. So like he was showing how bad he was to piss them off, I feel like. Like you know how they do the rebellious kid? Well, he was like the rebellious kid. And he witnessed a lot of domestic abuse with his mom and his mom's new husband, which it resulted in his mom having her arm broken. So, like, he witnessed a lot of the abuse that she was going through, and it would piss him off, but she wouldn't do anything about it. Oh, like, she never left the man. She never divorced him. So, like, when he was going to therapy, his therapist was like, look, I think he needs a single family environment. It would make him a lot better.
Yeah.
Well, instead of his dad taking that upon himself to make him feel more at home with his step-siblings and his siblings, he pushed him around. So he moved in with his aunt and uncle, and then he moved in with his grandparents, both pairs of grandparents, and none of them really wanted him. He was just being pushed around by all these people. So then he ended up moving with a friend named Jesse Reed. And, like, when he started being like living with them, he started going to church and he became a born-again Christian, which is really weird because like when you listen to his music, he's like anti-God everything. Like in Heart-Shaped Box, he is hanging on a cross, so I think that was really like, well, he's not legit hanging on a cross, but like,
did he die that way?
What do you mean?
Christian? Did he say no, he was? Or that was just a thing that he did when he was younger?
It was just a thing he did when he was younger, I feel like. He was very, like, into religion. So he just, he started his anti-God fashion in his song lyrics later on. I guess it, like, described him as a Gnostic or whatever. Mm-hmm. So after he left Jesse's home, he began couch surfing, and he would go stay in the waiting room of the hospital he was born in and, like, sleep in the waiting room because he said, you know, nobody's going to tell the guy who's waiting on his sick family to leave or stop sleeping in here. So he would do that when he had nowhere warm to stay.
Did it work? Oh,
my. Yeah, he did it, like, he did it once in a while, but, like, he said he didn't want to, like, get caught or anything, so yeah. He didn't do it too frequently. He explained in one of his songs that he made something in the way that, like, he lived under a bridge and in cardboard boxes, but they never had evidence that he actually did, but, I mean, who's just gonna make that shit up?
Yeah.
Like, he was homeless, so he did what he had to do. But he would bounce around until he got a good gig and started janitoring at a school. He finally had enough money and would get hotel rooms. So he ended up staying in room 226. It was his favorite because it came from a song, Rock, Drugs, and 226. So, like, I mean, that's how rock he is or whatever. He was just like, he was that rock icon. Or what the fuck ever. He was like a sub-pop genre until grunge came out. Because they never had grunge. So in 1985, he formed a band named Fecal Matter after he dropped out of high school. They soon disbanded in 86.
Ew. Guys. Fecal Matter.
I mean, okay. Nirvana's way better. He got that from a Buddha documentary he was watching.
Yeah, that sounds better than Fecal Matter.
Yeah. he was gross, though. I mean,
dirty tampons.
Like, a lot of his drawings, like, whenever you go through his journal, are gross. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, born babies coming out of the vagina with hair and
yeah,
this weird shit that he would come up with. So, he would hang out with the band Melvin, and he even tried joining them, but he felt like they didn't fit his musical goals that he had going for himself. Until he met Chris Novoselic.
Well, I don't know how to say his name.
I don't know. I love this band so much, I don't know how to say his name. Okay, we're going to call him Chris. He practiced upstairs above Chris's mom's hair salon with their band, and he tried to convince him to start a band with him, and he just refused to. He was like, nah, dude, we're not going to be in a band. But then they eventually started a band named Nirvana with a drummer named Chad. They played a few gigs, but, like, they weren't getting big because Chad sucked, but so did Kurt and Chris. They both sucked. Like, Chris played guitar, but he didn't have these actual, like, rhythms that he would follow. He would just do that, and then he would just scream into the microphone. Like, they were not good. So, whenever they decided that Chad wasn't their goal, they fired him. And then he broke up with his girlfriend, Tracy, who he wanted a rock and roll girlfriend who was in that scene with him. Probably also a heroin addict. Mm-hmm. So, he ended up getting a new drummer named Dave Grohl and a new girlfriend, Courtney Love. So, he started dabbling into heroin in 1986. And his reasoning for starting heroin was because he went to go to his dealer one day to get some oxy and aspirin because he had really bad stomach issues, and he would go to the hospital and try and figure out what was going on. Like, he was just constantly throwing up or, like, shitting his brains out. He could never keep anything down, so when he would eat, he would just automatically get sick. So he had no nutrients. That's why he was so skinny. And he went to the doctor and they couldn't figure out anything that was going wrong with him, so he was like, all right, I'm just gonna numb it myself. So he started taking a shitload of oxys and aspirin. And one day, his dealer ran out of oxy and he was like, do you want to try this? And he was like, I'll try whatever. And he said that he did heroin maybe 10 times from 1986 to 1990.
Wow.
But I think that's bullshit. Like, I think he was a full-blown addict immediately. Yeah. Like, he started smoking pot when he was 13. And then he started doing LSD. And then from there, he started abusing alcohol. And then he started shooting up heroin, you know, drastically.
Life of a rock star.
Yeah, let's just start shooting up heroin instead of smoking a doobie. I mean, it's drastic, but a lot of people say once you try it, like, you get instantly hooked.
Yeah.
So, it's like euphoria everywhere.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
No, and I don't like that. I always say that. I'm like, I'm glad I never tried any drugs because knowing me, I'm a very addictive person.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be good for me.
I'll probably like it.
His reasoning for not quitting heroin was because it made him feel better and he could eat.
Okay.
But, I mean, you're shooting up heroin and you're nodding out. You can't feel
your body.
So. Yeah, pretty much. So, it was just kind of not, it was contradicting itself. His family had a really bad history of alcoholism and also suicide tendencies. Like, he had two uncles that died of suicide by gunshot. Mm-hmm. So, he wasn't really set up very well mentally. You could tell he was, like, depressed. Because, like, the shit that he would say and he would write, like, obviously he had depression. Obviously he had anxiety. On top of the stomach ailments and his addiction, he was, like, not set up very well.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't a very stable person. When he had met Courtney, he went to a concert one night with the rest of the band. And Courtney was the lead singer and guitarist of Hole, which is another grunge band. And they had the same manager. And the manager was on the ground roughing with her because, like, when in the rock world, they said, when you punch somebody, it shows, like, they did a really good job. So he's punching on Courtney. And Kurt runs in there and jumps on him to break him apart. And they were just looking at him like, what the fuck are you doing? He was like, you were just hitting a chick. And it was Courtney Love.
Yeah.
So, like, they instantly hit it off. She kept getting him to try and go on dates with her. And he would, like, bail on her or not show up for the dates and, like, ignored her phone calls and shit until he was like, you know what, I really do like her, she's pretty hot, this will be cool, but we could do this, let's get it on, we could do this. So instantly they, like, fell in love and were, like, this rock couple. She said they were, like, the, how did she say that, they were, like, the sex couple icon or some shit. Okay, so I was watching Montage of Heck, and, like, she was always topless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she always wanted her tits out, and they were not cute. She did not have cute tits. She just wasn't attractive to me. Like, I thought she was ugly, and she was had an ugly personality.
Yeah, personality does it for me.
She's awful. And she's like, I'm the most hated person in America. Yeah, you are. Nobody likes you, Courtney Love. Nobody. So, they ended up dating for 2 years before they got married. And she was sober for 6 months when she had met Kurt off of heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically blamed it all on him for her starting heroin again. Which I think is bullshit. Like, you're the one that's putting the needle on your arm. She said, like, to be with Kurt, I had to be an addict.
Oh, my God.
So, like,
she... So then don't be with him.
Exactly. She was like, it was either Kurt and the drugs or be sober and be without Kurt. Because that was the only way I was going to have. You could have been sober, but...
And single.
Yeah, and single. Like, you didn't have to be with an addict. So, she basically puts the finger, like, points the finger on him of the blame of why she started using again. So...
Don't like that.
I just think it's a little bullshit. Like, she wanted to be with an addict. She wanted to have that rock star lifestyle. She wanted to have the addict as her man in her life. And she wanted... She had love for heroin. So it all fell in her lap at once. Like, she didn't have any restrictions. She was living in heaven right there.
Mm-hmm.
And they continued their full-blown addiction as Kurt's success became overwhelming. And it kind of pushed him further into the shell that he was going in. She became pregnant with Francis... really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And Courtney said they were trying to have a baby. Like, they wanted to have a baby as quick
during
as possible.
All of that?
Yeah. And they even said, like, she was shooting up while she was pregnant with Francis.
Fuck no.
And she told Kurt, like, I'm built like an ox, so the baby's gonna be fine. Like, I could stop at any time and she's gonna be fine. Which Francis came out okay, but CPS was on their ass because they were in a news article. One magazine article about a friend seeing her shoot up while she was pregnant.
Mm-mm.
And then she admits it. So, yeah, they're going to follow you around. You're shooting up heroin while you're pregnant.
And how she even was able to raise her kid after that?
Because they can never prove that she did it.
Wasn't in her system or nothing when she gave birth?
I don't think they used to test like that, though. I mean, they probably should have. But when they went to get married on February 24th, 92, she was already pregnant. And Kurt had an obsession with Frances Farmer, who was this actress back in the 50s or 40s. And she had bipolar disorder, and everybody thought that she was just batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. So they put her in a sane asylum, and they did lobotomies on her. So she ended up escaping Seattle and was able to live her life, but she was never normal again. So Kurt was, like, super obsessed with her. So on their wedding day, Courtney had bought a lacy satin dress that was owned by Frances Farmer. And his stupid ass wore a Guatemalan t-shirt with some green PJ bottoms because he was too lazy to wear a tux, he said. So he was dressed like he was going to sleep.
Okay.
And she was wearing this cute little dress, but she still looked like trash. My opinion. So they got married in Hawaii, and he only had 8 people attend their wedding. Like, they invited very few amount of people. So let's fast forward to her birth. So it was August 18th, 1992. He ended up getting a sonogram from one of her ultrasounds and put it on the cover of the single Lithium. Mm-hmm. So he would always do morbid shit like that, like in utero. I don't really remember what it was, but it was like a skeleton on the front. Like, he has all kinds of weird shit. And I thought it just kind of fell intact with it. She was born, so they were still abusing drugs. Like, immediately after she had the baby, she started using drugs, and CPS would come around all the time and, like, check on them. So they started piss testing them, running drug screens on them every day, and they ended up getting semi-clean. So after they went through all these legal fees and these trials and all this bullshit, they spent maybe, like, $400,000 on legal fees and their attorney fees and stuff. So CBS eventually left them alone. And I was watching Montage of Heck again, and there was a video of when Courtney was cutting Francis's hair for the first time. And she's like, Kurt, come inside. Like, he was outside smoking a cigarette. She was like, come inside. I want you to hold Francis while I cut her hair. And he's literally holding the baby, nodding in and out. Like, he's nodding in and out. And he's saying in the camera, like, nobody said anything about him being on drugs. And he's like, I'm not on drugs. I'm just tired. Obviously, you're on drugs, Kurt. You look strung out. You have sores all over your face. You're nodding in and out while you're holding your one-year-old. And she would not shut the fuck up. She is so annoying. Like, watching these home videos of her make me more annoyed with her than anything. Because she just doesn't shut up. And she's so loud. Like, there's this video of them in their house. And they're in, like, this random office room. And they're jumping on each other. And she's singing at the top of her lungs. And he's playing a guitar very badly. And he's just beating it on the ground. And she's singing louder to be louder than what he is. It was so annoying. I was like, that's that couple that I just wouldn't want to see. Like, they were so annoying together. They were so annoying together. So, after all this, after Francis turned a year old, or about to turn a year old, he was performing, at a concert on July 23rd, 93. And he ended up overdosing on heroin in his hotel room right before. Mm. And instead of Courtney calling the ambulance, she just shoots him up with Noxolin. And he goes on to perform the concert like nothing ever happened.
What the fuck?
Like, he just wakes up.
What is this Noxolin? What is that?
Naloxone. It's kind of like, what are the sheep people up now? Narcan. It's kind of like that, but it's a little bit stronger. And it was easier for them to get. And it was cheaper. So she just shoots him up with it, and he pops up, and he goes on to perform that concert that night.
Oh, my God.
Like, you did not just almost die. An OD. You still have the heroin going through your veins.
She's like, bitch, get up. Go perform.
Literally. Like, didn't do anything. So he's obviously in a downward spiral. He's suffering from depression, on top of a toxic love life, on top of being a new dad, on top of being a heroin addict, on top of the rock star lifestyle, like, he is just full-fledged going downhill. And you want to know what's crazy? They have a man nanny that lives in with them, that takes care of Francis, and his name's Michael Callie Dwight. Like, they would call him Callie. Guess who he is?
Who?
Courtney's ex-boyfriend.
That's weird.
Also, a full-blown junkie, too.
Oh. Yeah, maybe that a kid.
Poor Francis. Like, she didn't have so much already going against her with two junkie parents.
And a junkie nanny.
And a junkie nanny. So, I get suspicious about them the more I look into it, because...
About Courtney and the nanny?
Yeah, because it's already her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
He lives with them.
That's kind of weird.
When Kurt's on tour, who's to say what she's doing in the house with
him? Yeah.
And they're both junkies, so they probably just get high out of their brains and fuck. So,
And not watch Francis.
So, on March 3rd, 1994, Kurt was hospitalized in Rome after overdosing on Rohinol, which is a pain pill.
Mm-hmm.
And Courtney swore that he left a suicide note there, but she had burned it. So, it's almost like she's trying to make up these trails of suicide attempts that might not have actually been suicide attempts. Because, okay, so the way she explains it is he took 50 pills. He did it on purpose. He wanted to die. But I feel like he didn't realize how many he took, so he just kept taking more.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
So the doctor that was treating Kurt, Dr. Yuslavo Galetta, was the doctor that treated him, and he said, quote, "We can usually tell a suicide attempt, and it didn't look like one for me," end quote. Courtney told the press that he was in a coma for 20 hours and was legally dead. But he wasn't. He was not dead. He was fine. He was good. He was getting treated by the doctor. So I feel like it was a false trail of suicide attempts leading up to his actual death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's trying to make it look like he was suicidal for real.
Like, maybe she was planning this.
Yeah. And they ended up following that overdose with an intervention. And a few days before they did the intervention, Chris offered to buy him some supper. He was like, "Let's go get something to eat for dinner. We can hang out. We can play some music. We could chill." Mm-hmm. And he ended up unintentionally driving him to go score some dope.
Unintentionally?
Yeah, he was like... So this is how he says it. He's like, quote, "His dealer was right there. He wanted to get fucked up into oblivion. He just wanted to die. That's what he wanted to do," end quote. Like, he, everywhere he turned, he had a dealer there. He was just getting fucked up all the time. And Chris didn't even realize that he was bringing him to go get dope.
Yeah.
He was just being a good friend, trying to get some dinner with him and hang out. So, the intervention followed Courtney and the rest of the group, the band, and some family to try and get him to, like, get sober. Like, you have a baby now, you need to get your life together. So she went to a hotel room in Los Angeles and detoxed in the room. And it was supposed to be, like, this legit program. While he went to actual rehab named Exodus Recovery Center. And he was there for a day. A day. And he jumps a 6-foot brick building, like, wall, and escapes.
Oh, my God.
So he, like, goes to the nearest airport. And he could have went and saw Courtney, which she was less than 10 miles away from him at the rehab.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided to get to the airport, get a ticket, and come back home to Seattle. So he paid like $400 for first class flight, and he's on his way to Seattle. She notices that he's spending money like that and what he spent it on, so she calls the credit card company and is like, "Hey, it was stolen. I need you to cut it off." So they cancel the credit card. He has no money on him. He's stuck in Seattle now, so he has no way to get home. So he ends up, when he's on the plane, he runs into Duff McKagan, who was the guitarist for Guns N' Roses, and he was also coming home from rehab for being addicted to heroin. Like, he was also coming home from rehab. So they're hanging out on the plane, and they're, like, drinking, and they're having fun or whatever. And he noticed that Kurt was, like, really depressed. Like, everything he was talking about, he was being really depressed. So he was like, Kurt said, I'm going to go outside and smoke. And Duff was like, all right, cool. So he's talking to the guy that was picking him up, and he was like, look, we have been drinking. Kurt's depressed. Like, there was no foreseeing that he was going to commit suicide. Let's just bring him back to our apartment and, like, let him hang out. Well, they walk outside to go get Kurt, and he's already gone. He already jumped in the cab and left. So he goes to the nearest hotel room, to the nearest junkie place, like, where he would normally score some dope. And he ended up buying some dope and stayed in the hotel room 226. And he then decided he was going to get some bullets. So 9 days before they found his body, him and Callie had went to a gun shop and bought a gun. Because they had burglaries in the area and they just wanted to be safe.
Okay.
So that's their reasoning for buying a 20 gauge shotgun. He bought some ammunition, and on his ride to the rehab, he gave it to the guy that was bringing him. He was like, you need to get rid of this ammunition. And the guy was like, why? He was like, you just need to get rid of it. Why are you getting rid of ammunition if now, like, you just bought the gun? Why are you getting rid of the ammunition? What's the reason? So it was a little suspicious, like, why are you getting rid of it? What's the reasoning? Yada, yada, yada. So when he gets to his house, he ends up going to his house on April 1st, and he sees Callie, and he, like, walks in Callie's room. His girlfriend's there. They're talking and shit, and then he leaves at 6:30 in the morning, gets in a cab, and leaves. Courtney and Callie had had communication that whole day. April 2nd was the next day. They had communication the whole day. The next day, April 3rd, Courtney hires a private investigator named Tom Grant to find Kurt because he disappeared. He's not talking to Courtney. He's not returning her calls. She has no way to get in touch with him. But she doesn't tell the PI that Callie saw Kurt the day before. So you're hiring a PI, but you're not going to tell him the little bit of information that you have on your missing husband?
Mm-hmm.
Why? So he is a little suspicious immediately. And it ends up becoming revealed that Kurt was seeking a divorce, and they both signed a prenup. Kurt was more successful than Courtney was, so if they got a divorce, the only thing that they would split or she would get out of him is what they purchased while they were married.
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't going to get any fucking money. They were also going to fight over custody of Francis, and she...
And neither one needed custody over Francis.
Period. They both, not saying Kurt was a shitty dad because he really did love her and treated her well.
Yeah, but at the same time, he can't be a fucking crackhead.
Yeah, like he wasn't stable at all. So, as soon as so Rosemary Carroll is the attorney for Kurt and Courtney.
Uh-huh.
And she was the one who did all the legal stuff whenever they were fighting CPS for Francis. She's also Francis's godmother. So, like, she's close into the family. And she was telling the PI, like, you know, Kurt was seeking a divorce, and Courtney calls me and tells me that he's seeking a divorce, and she wants to find the meanest, sickest attorney that she can, and she wanted to get the prenup voided, which you can't.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Not when you're already seeking out a divorce. Like, maybe, like, if you did it right after, right? Like, if both parties agreed to,
yeah,
like,
if both parties agreed, it doesn't matter. But if you're trying to get it voided behind his back,
after he's already seeking out a divorce.
Right.
Sketch.
So, it's already seeming suspicious. Mm-hmm. Well, while all this is taking place, they find out that, he ended up talking to a lawyer to file for divorce. So they're like, so he legit was gonna divorce her, and she was cheating on him. Like, she tried to say
with the nanny.
They never said who she was cheating on him with, but obviously it was the nanny.
Come on, ex-boyfriend.
Okay. And he lived with you. Y'all had, like, sexual attraction in the past. It just, it's fishy.
Yeah.
So she tried to say that Kurt was cheating on her, and she said, you know, Kurt Kurt caught me thinking about cheating on him. Like, I never even made the phone call to cheat on him, and he was threatening to kill himself. Why are you always trying to say that he's going to kill himself?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of overkill right now.
Yeah. She's trying to protect herself.
He was already, like, a very successful grunge icon, and she fell off, and she seen herself as the most hated woman of rock, which, in my eyes, I feel like she deserved it, because she was. She really was hated, and, I mean, we all agree why. Like, it's just suspicious how all this shit's going down. So, after all that bullshit had went down, nobody has heard from Kurt since April 2nd. It's April 3rd at this point, and every time she talked to the PI, he would record her conversation. He'd record every conversation he had with anybody. And she never disclosed information about Callie seeing him. She never exposed that she was also an addict, even though she was shooting up in front of him.
What?
Like, he meets up with her in the hotel room that she's supposed to be detoxing in, and they're shooting up heroin while he's talking to her. They walk in at first when they first met her, and she's laying in this negligee that's see-through with, like, her pussy out, her tits out, smoking a cigarette on her bed, like, trying to seduce these men. She's like, I could flirt with a chair. Like, I'm just a very flirtatious person. We see that you're a slut.
Like, we see you, girl.
We see what kind of person... I mean, no slut shaming, but she is. I hate her. I'm allowed to use that word. I hate her. So, they had all this shit going on, and Francis had just been born, and it seemed like after his depression and all this and how bad he wanted to die, having Francis kind of brought a light back to his life. Mm-hmm. He was able to be happy. He saw himself living longer. He wanted to see her grow up. So it's kind of like it switched his whole point of view of life around. He wanted to live for Francis, which a lot of parents are like that. Like, having a kid sometimes saves people's lives, some mm-hmm. people. And everything about the case points to suicide until you look really closely at the details they missed. So, we'll get into, like, him actually doing it. Courtney, as much as she tried to not point fingers at Kurt, she did. But she heightened his addiction. She made it worse. She was like fire to the fuel. She made every aspect of his life worse. Like, Kurt was strung out, yes. But I feel like if he didn't get with her, there was a chance where he would have got clean. But you're both an addict, so you're not going to take that initiative to get clean. You're living your life right now.
Mm-hmm.
LiveForLiveMusics.com said, quote, Grant was hired by Courtney Love to find Kurt Cobain when he left Exodus Recovery Center in Marina Del Rey, California, April 1st, 1994, and he couldn't be located. Love phoned a missing persons report to the Seattle police pretending to be Kurt Cobain's mother, Wendy O'Connor. She pretended like he was her...
Why?
She was his mom. I don't know. And also it says, Love remains in Los Angeles sending Grant to find Cobain with the help of Dylan Carson, which is one of their close friends. Love stated in O'Connor's name that Cobain was missing, he was suicidal, and in possession of a shotgun. Grant later evaluated the call as being a diversion to paint Kurt as suicidal, as he was set up to be murdered. The impression left by Love's report was to be no less than the singer's mother felt that Cobain was a danger to himself and had the investigation toward the verdict of suicide. Mm-hmm. End quote. So, like, she was trying to put it in the cop's head, like, I'm a worried mother, my son is suicidal, like, mm-hmm. da-da-da-da, but really it's the conniving wife that was calling. Mom didn't even know that he was missing.
Picture.
The mom didn't even know that he had escaped rehab at this point.
Damn.
Courtney knew, because she couldn't get in touch with Kurt. It was such a fucked up situation, because, like, you're going to hide that about the parents, but at the same time, you're going to put in a missing persons report in his mom's name. It's just fucked up. Yeah, it's spish. So, April 5th, 1994, Kurt Cobain walked to his fridge, grabbed a Burke's root beer, and headed to his greenhouse. He drinks half the drink, lights a cigarette, smokes while he melts down the heroin in his spoon. he injects himself in 3 times the lethal amount of heroin and then pulls the trigger and shoots himself.
Wow.
Which is written on the death certificate. Like, on the autopsy report, he injected the heroin and he shot himself.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some weird, suspicious things that happened. He wasn't discovered until April 8th. His death was April 5th. They didn't discover until April 8th. April 6th, the PI and Dylan, their friend, go to their house, and they're looking in all the rooms. They're calling for him. There's, like, audio recording of them saying, "Kurt, where are you? Like, where are you, Kurt?" And then they find a letter that Callie had wrote to Kurt saying, "Look, you need to get in touch with Courtney. She's being really paranoid. It's not making sense that you're not calling her. Like, be a good man. Call your wife."
Mm-hmm.
It looked like it was staged. Like, the way he was writing it, it was not sincere at all. He didn't give a shit. He was just trying to divert them.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan was told by Courtney to take them to the greenhouse. And Dylan didn't bring the PI to the greenhouse. That was the only room in the entire house they did not check. They had 8 police officers that went to that house the same day to check for Kurt, and nobody went in the greenhouse.
Why would they not go there?
Because it was ducked off. If you didn't know about the greenhouse in the house, you didn't know where it was, so you didn't know to look in it. But Dylan knew about it. He was told to bring him there, and he didn't.
And he chose not to.
Right. So, on April 8th, electrician goes to do some service work on Kurt and Courtney's house, and he passes by the side view of a window, and he sees a body laying there gripping the shotgun barrel, and there's, like, not a lot of blood, but he sees, like, a needle and a spoon and a box, and he calls the cops, and he's like, "I found a dead body. I think it's Kurt Cobain." Hangs up with the cops and immediately calls the radio station and is like, "Look, I got some information for you. I just found Kurt Cobain's body." And the radio talk host or whatever was like, "I don't really believe you, man. Like, whatever." So he calls the police station. He's like, "Is there any, like, records of Kurt Cobain his body being found?" And they're like, "Yeah, we did find a body at Kurt Cobain's house." And he was like, "Oh, shit, it really was." So he tries to get back in touch with the guy, but he's too busy, like, being interviewed by the cops now. So at the crime scene, Tom Grant pulls up, which was the PI,
mm-hmm.
and he's trying to talk to the detective that's running the case. And he's like, "Look, I got some information that I feel like will help you. I was here the night before today. Like, there's some information I have that I think will be helpful." And the guy's like, "I'll talk to you later. I don't have any time to talk to you right now." So that's suspicious about the cops, because wouldn't you want to talk to somebody immediately?
Yeah.
About the information they might have about the situation that's going on.
Yeah.
It just didn't make sense.
Trying to get the information as fast as possible.
Right. Right. So Rosemary and Grant also thought that the letter seemed staged, and they just couldn't make sense of what was going on. The day after Kurt's body was found, Rosemary had a bag that was from Courtney that she left at her house, and they pull it out, and it's a piece of paper with a bunch of different letters on it. It's like she was practicing the alphabet for the suicide note.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they said that the suicide note was 2 different handwritings. At first, it started talking to Buddha, who was his imaginary friend, and he's talking about leaving the music life and leaving the band and living his life, and then at the end, it's almost like a stereotypical suicide note. Like, "I love you. Life's going to be better without me. Don't forget about me."
Mm-hmm.
Like, shit like that.
In a separate handwriting.
Exactly. So
she just took a note from wherever his...
Yeah, out of his journal, probably.
Yeah.
And just started
added
writing.
To
to make it look like a suicide note. So they found the evidence of her trying to make letters look like his. And they compared it to the suicide note, and it was exact letters. Like, she traced over it. Like, she traced the letter of Kurt's, then she traced over that.
That's definitely...
suspicious.
Yeah.
And it was just... these things weren't adding up, and they were coming out simultaneously. Like, they were just not stopping. So after all that, they also noticed that when he had shot himself, the rifle was upside down. So the trigger was right here. He would have to hold it like this.
You can't do that with a shotgun. Did he have long arms, though?
I mean, he was skinny and lanky, but he had 3 times the lethal amount of heroin in his system. So yeah, how so could he accurately
pick that up
and pull the trigger like that? It doesn't make any sense. Like, he was probably not even conscious at that point. So when they found the gun with him, the shell would have went to the right. It was found on the left side. Or was it the opposite? Hold on 1 second, I can't remember. It was found on the left side of his body, and it was supposed to go in the right, so I was right. But because it was upside down, if the gun shell would have went to the side it was supposed to, it's almost as if it ricocheted off of something. Mm-hmm. So somebody might have been standing there shooting the gun for it to ricochet to go the opposite way. Yeah. Or it was placed there to make it look like a suicide, even though it wasn't. Like, when you die, your hand clutches, and, like, it's called the death grip, mm-hmm. and he had that around the gun. So they're saying that, like, if the shell or the gun would have moved to go the opposite way, his whole wrist would have did something that's, like, impossible. Like, it would have been all the way around. So they were like, they never... This is the part that pisses me off. The day that he was found, they send his body to get an autopsy. 6 days later, they cremate the body. So they didn't do a second autopsy. They...
Why?
Because Courtney had privilege over his body.
Oh my God. And she wanted it, like, cremated as soon as possible.
Yeah. So,
of course.
Wait, that's not the worst part. So he gets cremated 6 days later. They never tested his body for gunpowder residue. But
the
detective on scene said that it was such a small area and it was a shotgun that the gunpowder would have traveled through the air anyway. So whether you shot the gun or not, he would have had it on him.
Yeah.
Because he was in close range, which is understandable. But they didn't print the gun. They didn't check for prints on it until 30 days after the day he was found.
Okay, so the cops are either really shitty or... A lot of them were paid.
They didn't give a
sum of money to not do something.
You turn the guy away who has information. You don't close down the crime scene the correct way.
And it's a famous person. You think you would be, like, really particular.
But somebody said, like, the easiest way to get rid of somebody is to kill a junkie. Because they think they just shoot up the heroin and so forth. They were like, oh, maybe he didn't die because his body was used to heroin, so he shot himself instead. But it just seems like they're trying to make an alibi for it, you know? So, that's the shitty part. Then, Courtney ends up getting the shotgun back before the test results come back to get it melted down.
See, why would you melt a gun? Why would you melt it? Why would you not just give it away or sell it or drop it off at a pawn shop? Like, I would want my money back. I wouldn't want that gun if my significant other killed himself with it, you know? Like, exactly. I would sell it.
Unless you're trying to get rid of the evidence.
Like, melting it would not be crossing my mind.
Exactly.
It just wouldn't.
Like, what are you melting it for?
Yeah, for what? And also, I'd want my money back.
Period. You want your money back. So, after Kurt's death, Rosemary Carroll reveals to Grant that she feels the suicide note was forged and that she had found the bag at Courtney's house. Well, in the middle of her talking about all this with Tom Grant, she goes, "Are you recording this?" And he says, "Yes, I record every conversation I have if it's dealing with the case I'm working on." Mm-hmm. She immediately recants everything that she said. She says that she denies everything and... if it comes public, she's going to throw him under the bus. Why are you trying to help this man so much if all of a sudden you find out it's recorded?
And
you take back everything you said?
Yeah.
And you're a lawyer. So she sends a lawsuit to Tom Grant, suing him for blasphemy and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
You willingly told him this information.
Him. Yeah.
Exactly. Why does it have to disclose that you're being recorded? Obviously, he's a PI. Obviously, he's investigating it. Obviously, he wants the evidence and to be able to play it back. Like, come on.
And why would you not record when you're in a situation like that?
Exactly.
And that's your job.
Exactly. Yeah. It was rhetorical for her to do that. So, while all this is going on, Courtney can't get her story straight of where Callie is. She says he was in Georgia. Then she says he was in El Paso, Texas. Then she says he was in Los Angeles. Well, the guy that was with Tom Grant the night before Kurt was found, he wants to have an interview with him. Because he's like, it doesn't make any sense. Why didn't he bring me to the greenhouse?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's at Courtney's house. And he's calling for him like, yo, Dylan, I'm here for the interview. Dylan comes downstairs high out of his mind on heroin. He's so strung out that he's nodding in and out, trying to have a conversation with Tom Grant. Courtney knew what she was doing. Mm-hmm. She probably noticed that he was having anxiety about it and was nervous, so she shot him up so he couldn't talk about
mm-hmm.
it. So Grant was like, you know what? I was fed up with it. Courtney tried to get him to stop investigating the situation by giving him a different case, like bribing him to pay him to investigate another case instead of Kurt's
case.
Why would you hire a PI if you didn't want, like, you know, if you're doing some conniving, why would you hire a PI?
Well, she probably just wanted on record that she hired a PI and she tried, but
yeah,
then realized he was actually doing his job, panicked because she
was being suspicious to begin with.
Yeah.
Nothing added up with her. And, like, I don't understand how, if they did murder him, how are two junkies smart enough to get away with it? To make it look like a suicide completely. Hmm. Or is it the fact that just nobody gives a fuck about the situation because Kurt was a junkie?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's more what it was. Like, nobody really gave a shit about him because of who he was. And multiple people had went into the house. Nobody went to the greenhouse. Nobody searched it. Nobody viewed it. It's just not adding up. And according to Rosemary, Dylan was told to take him into the greenhouse and he didn't. So all of these point towards the greenhouse and nobody was disclosing the information. Nobody was giving anybody information about where Kurt was. Like, they didn't disclose that Callie had saw him the day before he died.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the day before she hired the PI. Why are y'all being so secretive about this shit? Y'all knew his body was in there.
Right.
Y'all knew in order to write the suicide note, you had to perfect the letters. You knew that if somebody went in there and saw the shotgun shell, they were gonna search about it and see that it ricocheted and went in the wrong direction.
I'm just wondering, with all this information that the cops had, like, why wasn't she prosecuted more? Like,
the chief of police didn't want to reopen the case. He said it was case closed because it was a suicide. And the new chief of police said it would cost too much money to reopen the case.
So what about Kurt's parents? Like, what did they...
They just accepted that he committed suicide.
What?
Like, the people that were working the case...
Even with all the other information?
Damn. None of that information really came out until, you know, talk about, like, the movies came out and all this shit. Like, nobody really knew they were being investigated for that.
So many questions.
Right.
I guess only Kurt and Courtney know.
This is true. Like, on April 17th...
And one person's dead, so...
On April 17th, she was supposed to meet up with the PI to give him the coroner's report, and she never met up with him. Like, there's so many things that lead to her being guilty, but at the same time, it kind of leads on
like
her...
Like, not guilty enough to cause, like...
Exactly. Like, if she would confess, that would be one thing. But I feel like she just didn't give a fuck about anything in her life.
She is still living. Maybe one day she'll come to something and...
She's still strung out on heroin. Like, Frances ended up inheriting money from her dad
mm-hmm.
when her dad died. Because he had a will set.
So, who raised her, though, after Kurt died? Courtney?
Yeah, on and off. Her and some grandparents and other friends and family helped. But, like, she was so strung out that Frances hated her. And Courtney ended up stealing money from Frances. That was from Kurt. Yeah. She stole money from her. And she ended up getting, like, $1 billion worth of things and money after Kurt died. And another reason why it seems so suspicious, he wanted the divorce, but he also was rewriting his will. So she wasn't going to be in his will anymore. So she wasn't going to get anything. And she didn't... They said that, like, she felt like she was getting more sympathy with Kurt committing suicide than if they just got a divorce. Yeah. It was just really fucked up. And I think she did it. I think her and Callie did it.
It definitely sounds suspicious. Like, I got a lot more questions.
I feel like...
That are obviously not going to get answered.
Right. I feel like if he would have committed suicide, he would have just OD'd. Or he would have just shot himself. I don't think he would have done both.
Yeah.
Or, like, I feel like...
Unless he wanted one last high, but...
I really don't feel like he did it, though, because of Francis. You know?
Yeah.
It just seems like he had too much to live for now. But at the same time, everybody got demons.
Mm, you're right.
Courtney definitely is a demon. Fuck that bitch. Fuck her. But anyway, so that was our episode on the conspiracy of Kurt Cobain's death. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Crime, Lime, and Vodka. We're a newly established podcast, which is made up of a bartender and a hairdresser who likes to unwind with a cocktail and a crime case. We'll contain violent descriptions and streams of details following the murder cases. Here's to make a difference in the only way that we know how. Thanks for tuning in to Crime, Lime, and Vodka.